So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
This episode of The North Remembers is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. If you're looking for some new makeup or skincare for the spring, Minute with Mary has got you covered. You can actually just search the hashtag Minute with Mary on social media. I'd love to connect with you.
My father was the most honorable man I ever met. You said he lied to me all my life.
Your father, Ned Stark, he promised your mother he'd always protect you. And he did. Robert would have murdered you if he knew. You're the true king. Aegon Targaryen, sixth of his name, protector of the realm, all of it.
Daenerys is our queen.
She shouldn't be.
That's treason. It's the truth. You gave up your crown to save your people. Would she do the same?
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The North Remembers. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Game of Thrones on HBO, so sit back and relax because winter's here. Hi, everybody. How's it going? My name is Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I'm just breathless.
Right?
I am breathless right now.
Right?
I'm stunned. Game of Thrones is here. And I'm enjoying it, baby. Just remind me what it's like to just, like, experience dragons. Can you imagine just flying on dragons?
No, I can't. Oh, my goodness. But, you know, one of the things that has been so incredibly fun, not only having the premiere last night, was the actual build-up, was seeing the progression of Game of Thrones from the very beginning, 2011, when just us wee nerds were watching it, those of us who either read the books or were dragged into it from friends of ours who had read the books and loved the series, and then to see its progression, how it's grown, and it's really become such a huge thing with pop culture. I mean, both Blake and I are wearing shirts from Target, of all places, that are representing Game of Thrones. There was Oreos with Game of Thrones stuff. I mean, everybody and anybody is either watching the show, and if they're not, they're still talking about it online. There are people who don't have any connection to Game of Thrones, and yet they're still saying, should I watch Game of Thrones? Am I the only person watching Game of Thrones? I was like, they're even helping this trend, and they don't even realize it.
It's like been a from my travels throughout, you know, the area, like there are people that are super into it. Mm-hmm. Then there are like the posers who are like, yeah, I'm watching Game of Thrones. We're having a Game of Thrones party.
Hey, Game of Thrones parties are legit.
Oh, I know. But like these are the people that are just there for the social thing. And then there are people that don't watch it at all and they take pride in it.
Yes.
They're like, I want nothing
to
do. The
contrarians.
Yeah. They're doing it just for the sake of doing it, just to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't stand that.
I understand.
I can't stand that.
Well, of course, you're here, which most likely means that you're a Game of Thrones fan. If not, maybe you're watching us live on Facebook. And I'm saying this because we are hoping, unless winter comes to Rhode Island late, which sometimes it does. You know, it sometimes snows end of April or May.
Actually,
who knows
it has.
It does.
It snowed into May a couple of years.
Yeah. So as long as spring actually stays here and our babysitter keeps showing up, we will be coming live on Facebook through the Mary and Blake Facebook page while we do our episodes live. And we also want to make sure that, of course, you subscribe to the podcast. So once again, you can find us in your favorite podcast app. You can also find Blake and I on social media. All you need to do is search Mary and Blake. You can also head to MaryandBlake.com to find out all about our other podcasts and blogs.
All right, Marvin, you ready to get in? I'm kind of nervous.
Oh, okay.
I said this in the premiere episode. I'm still nervous.
Awesome.
You ready
to
get into this episode?
Yes.
Let's do it.
All right. right, so we're going to break down this, the premiere episode of season 8, the final season of Game of Thrones. Tell us what the title was and break everything down for us, Blake.
So this one was called Winterfell, a very simple, easy title. It was named, obviously, after where they are, and it's showing you exactly the setting of where we're going to be and setting everything up. I think it's an apropos title for the first episode of this brand new season. The director was Dave Hill. I'm sorry, the director was David Nutter. I apologize. The writer was Dave Hill. So we'll do the director. The director was David Nutter, who has directed The Old Gods and The New, A Man Without Honor, The Reigns of Castamere, Misa, The Dance of Dragons, and Mother's Mercy. So this is actually his first return back to Game of Thrones in two seasons.
Okay.
He last directed in season 5. Obviously, one of his most famous episodes being that of The Reigns of Castamere and Misa as well.
Misa.
The director was, I'm sorry, the writer. My notes are all off.
It's
I apologize.
Okay. It's okay.
The writer was Dave Hill. Now, Dave Hill was actually a staff writer for Game of Thrones on season 5, and he has gradually worked his way up to becoming a full member, a staff member of the show. And his first credits are actually started with Home and Eastwatch in season 6. And this is his first episode for season 8. So
awesome.
That is that. I'm actually quite happy to have David Nutter back. He is one of my favorite Game of Thrones directors. And I think he's just the man. He knows Game of Thrones. He knows the characters. He knows the story. He has the look down. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Awesome.
So what do you got for your dragon rating?
All right. So we're going to be rating each episode on a scale of 1 to 5 dragons. 1 being the worst, Burr, and 5 being
you're the worst, Burr.
I feel like I can no longer say the worst without saying Burr.
I know.
For all of us Hamilton fans out there. And then 5 being the best. I will tell you, this episode is a 5 for so many reasons. But first being that this is one of the first season premieres, if not season 1, that I actually enjoyed of Game of Thrones. Because Game of Thrones, traditionally for me, has like kind of frumpy beginnings. Like you need to watch.
Frumpy's an interesting word.
Right? But you kind of get in and you're like, meh. Like, it was okay. Like, the season premieres for me, usually, because there's so many moving pieces,
right.
Because they honestly have to remind you, after the long drought of not having Game of Thrones, they often have to say, okay, this is where everybody is. These are the conflicts. This is how much Bran has aged. We know he doesn't look like himself anymore. Here's what's going on with them. And so it traditionally has taken about 2 or 3 episodes to really get the wheels moving for the plot of Game of Thrones, for me to be really excited. And in this episode, thankfully, because almost everyone is in Winterfell, they were able to get the wheels moving very, very quickly. And of course, it is. It's just the season premiere of the final season. So I had to give it a 5.
Right, right. So for me, I'm at a 4.7 dragons. Listen, emotionally, I'm at a 5. Emotionally, I'm all in. I'm buying in. Put me in my Game of Thrones footy pajamas, okay? All right, because I'm all in. But the technical side of me, the TV side of me is saying, yeah, this was good. It was very good. It was a good start. But we got some stuff here that, that we could address. I mean, I think the premiere is good, but I think kind of opposite what you said, it kind of suffers from the premiere disease for me.
Yes.
And it sets every character up. It reintroduces us to the world. And it gives us a ton of exposition to catch up on. Like, you know, saying as Mary drops everything in our studio and breaks everything. Thank
Swish
you.
And flick.
It's good podcast radio right there. You know, it like, oh, this is Needle, you know, oh, hi, you know, and like, oh, do you remember this and X, Y, and Z? And like,
even Bran in the beginning, we don't have time for this. The Night King now has your dragon and they're approaching. It's like, just in case you are tuning in for Game of Thrones for the very first time, they give those little bits of exposition.
Right.
With Bran being the most awkward one, we don't have time for this.
And like the other thing too is like, oh, Tyrion and Sansa saying, oh, the last time we talked, we were at Joffrey's wedding. And I feel like that's something you probably would say in that moment.
Yes.
So, but it was just, it's a little exposition heavy for me.
Oh,
but,
I dug it, yeah.
But I think, though, thematically the episode is strong. I think the symmetry to season one, episode one, is
so
palpable.
Good.
I think is by design, absolutely by design. And I love, like, you get this from This Is Us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, go to maryandblake.com, check out our show, This Is Us, too. Shameless plug. You get that from This Is Us a lot, where it starts to reference its own... it starts to reference its own iconography.
Its own
visual storytelling and its own mythology.
Okay.
And its own story. Like, it references
just mirrored
itself.
Yes, yes.
And
it's
that.
It's inside jokes. It's little things that it did. All
right. Arrested Development was the king of referencing itself.
Yes.
Right? And for the sake of referencing itself. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel like this episode did, and I really like that. Okay, so what do you got for your GBG?
Okay, my good, my bad, and my great for this episode. Because it was a five dragon episode, it actually means that it's a good, great, best for the episode. I'm stealing your thunder from that.
Well, no, it's a 5+. Only 5 pluses get good.
Well, whatever. I'm still allowed to do it.
It's the premiere. We're breaking all the rules.
Yes. So my good for this episode was the new opening sequence.
Normally, especially
when Blake and I are like rewatching the episodes, we just fast forward through it. I mean, you know that it's really cool each week to watch it because they've made sure to tell you this is where you're going to be. Like, you need to know, you need to remember where these places are in location of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so they completely redid the opening sequence. Of course, the map has changed, as had the Astrolab. I had to look up what that was. Astrolab, that spinning thing, you know, with the metal and everything. But it actually, like, tells you things that you need to know.
That's right.
So it starts from south of the wall, which is now broken. Like, we've seen the wall. We've seen the Night's Watch, you know, like, have the little elevator all the time, but now it's broken. Mm-hmm. And then, as it progresses, the white tiles of snow turn into blue, and that leads us to Last Hearth, which is where the little kid was with all the little, like,
with the Umber,
arms.
Lord Umber.
Lord Umber, like 10-year-old Lord Umber who didn't make it too long. He ended up crispy at the end. But the tiles switched from white to blue, showing you, like, the Night King is going to come to the Last Hearth this episode. So I'm going to be really excited to see how next week, if the same thing happens, if it's changed again, and if the white tiles flip over to the blue tiles.
It'll keep changing.
And in addition, they reminded us, like, of the crypt. They actually showed us, like, the dragon killing weapon that Cersei has.
The scorpion.
Yes, down. So they showed you, like, these important things. Not only here's King's Landing, but here's King's Landing. Here's the Iron Throne. Below that is the XYZ. So I thought it was really great. My great for this episode was the Jon Snow and Arya reunion. That actually was, like, our runner up for the opening that we were going to use for this because it was just such an amazing moment on our screen. The needle reference, like you said.
Yep.
And I don't know. The only thing that weirded me out was, why was he making such a big deal? Like, oh, my Valyrian steel sword. Are you jealous or whatever? She has Valyrian steel right on her.
Right.
Why didn't she bring it up and say, oh, I've got some Valyrian steel too. It's more my size. Anyway, my best for this episode, though, as corny as it is, was Jon Snow flying a dragon. Like, you sat there and you're like, I knew this was going to happen. We all knew it was going to happen. And it's just TV glory. It's got, like, Disney hype to it. Mm-hmm. A whole new world, shining, simmering, splendid. But I ate it up. I really ate it up. I loved those views of the dragon soaring. I actually showed it to our 6-year-old little lad who's enamored by dragons. And I said, buddy, do you want to see what dragons do in the snow? And I showed him that sequence.
Yeah.
Because it was so beautifully done. They really did a beautiful job. It wasn't choppy. You know, you could tell they obviously spent so much time, money, and effort on it. So that's why it's my best. What was your GBG?
My good was Jon and Arya's reunion. Yes, because we finally get to see the layers of Arya melt away in this single moment. The toughness that she's created, that persona that she's created. And she kind of returns back to this little girl who's seeing the brother she idolized.
So good.
You know, the brother that she always treated like a brother. Mm-hmm. And the brother who always treated her like a sister, you know, and that smile of hers and how they run up and embrace and hold. But also because while that happens, we have a moment at the same time of grown-up Arya, not just a little kid Arya who's happy, but grown-up Arya saying, this is our family. stick to our family. Don't forget our family. And the irony is even thicker here because we all know that John, yes, is a Stark, but he's not the kind of Stark that we think that he is or we thought that he was. He's really a Targaryen. And it brings up this notion of, is he going to have to choose the Stark side or the Targaryen side of him? And it foreshadows what eventually we find out to be him, you know, what he eventually finds out to be him being a Targaryen. I love that that foreshadowing.
Yes.
And he's going to have to really decide who he wants to be.
So good. It just laid it all out in this really sweet reunion moment of like, this is a huge deal that Jon's going to have to decide between.
Yes, I totally agree. The bad for me, is it me or am I just not in love with the chemistry between Danny and John?
What?
Between Kit Harington and
Emilia Clarke? It might be just you. I mean, I'll be interested to hear what our listeners have to say. So you're saying you do not believe these two actors are in love?
No.
I mean,
no,
they're not, because he's obviously married.
Right, but no, but whatever. I mean, that aside, who cares? Yeah. Like, I really got that, and probably because it's true to life, I got that chemistry with Jon Snow and Ygritte. Right?
Yes. Like,
it was palpable.
It was so good.
Because they were probably really banging, right? But I even got that chemistry.
astute point, Blake. Astute point.
I really got that chemistry between Daenerys and Dario Naharis in the later seasons.
Well,
like,
maybe they
were. I don't know. They could be. But I feel like... I'm not in love with it, and I'm wanting more. And maybe it's just because we've had this time crunch where they just have to put us in a position to understand that they are in love, and we just have to catch up to that.
I mean, they are making a point that, like, in those little extra moments, we see them, you know, when Varys and Tyrion are up and they're looking at them, and you just see Jon and Dany giggling together. They're really making a point to show you that it's puppy love time.
Yes, but I feel like for me, it's more like someone who they're equals.
Yeah.
And they appreciate each other as opposed to being in love. But we got some PDA, you know, as they were walking through Winterfell, and obviously we had the dragon ride and the whole thing, and it was great. And
yes,
I think it's a building block. But I think we're suffering from the fact that the show has just moved so quickly.
Yes.
In terms of their relationship. All of a sudden they fell in love like that.
Well, and also this isn't a romance show, so we're not privy, aside from that gorgeous waterfall snowy scene, we're not privy to the little PDA moments. I highly doubt Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen are walking around the campments holding hands. You know, like, there, of course, we see those little moments giggling, but they are both leaders of these troops, and they're having this interesting dynamic where they know the Night King is going to come and kill them all,
right,
almost.
Right.
So I think that because this show is not necessarily a romance show, they do have to walk that fine line.
Right. And for me, the great was, you know, I have to go with John Bradley here, the guy who plays Sam. Listen, I've never been a huge Sam guy. I've never really been into the character. I mean, I think he's cute and he's funny, and he and Gilly are great.
Wait, you're not a huge Sam fan?
I'm not a huge Sam guy.
He's like one of my favorite characters.
And you know what? It's probably apropos this again, because I was never a big Samwise Gamgee guy.
Stop.
No.
Anyone named Samwise. I had a dream today, Blake, that we had a baby boy. I was at the Children's Museum and I saw a little baby boy, and I thought I would want to name a baby boy Samwise, because every Samwise that I've come across, I've loved. Baby Sam.
Listen, I appreciate Sam. I like Sam.
I don't think you appreciate him. I don't think you appreciate him.
Well,
that's the problem.
Either way, you need
to appreciate his complete nerdness.
Either way, I'm saying that I appreciate him now, because the acting that John Bradley did to go from being with Queen Daenerys, having that emotional range of being like, oh my God, you're the queen. Hi. Oh my God! And that all of a sudden finding out that his father was murdered, his brother was murdered by this woman, and being disappointed, and then having that to go talk to Bran to be like, bro, what is going on here?
My opinion of you, are Lannister.
Hold on,
loving Sam. I need to take a moment.
I'm most Lannister, I told you.
I know. They wouldn't appreciate Sam.
And then to go from that to tell Jon about
his
true parentage. That not only is it a great character arc, it's a great emotional arc, it's a great acting arc, and it's also great motivation because he's going to tell John, this woman murdered my father and my brother.
Yeah.
I know he didn't get along with his dad too much, but he didn't have any problems with his brother. And now he's forcing John to choose. Would she do this for you? You are actually the king. You, not her.
And you're in the north where people are not really excited to bend their knee. I mean, we don't even know Sansa's take. So he's telling him this. This is what happened to my family. Mm-hmm. You've got this whole big family. Everybody here in Winterfell, nobody seems pretty pumped to take Daenerys on as their queen. Is she going to burn them all up with her dragons too? Oh, goodness gracious.
All right, so there's a lot going on
here. There's so much to unpack.
There's a lot to unpack. You forget, we've been watching This Is Us recently. By the way, go to maryblake.com. Check out our show, This Is Us, too.
You just said that twice.
I know. This Is Us has some stuff, and Outlander has some stuff. But this kind of reminds me, I was talking to you earlier today when we podcasted about The Leftovers. Mm-hmm. I went down rabbit holes today.
Yes.
Just internally, trying to come up with notes and, mm-hmm. and remember and talk about this stuff. There's just so much. And mm-hmm. I weep for the future episodes when they're an hour and a half because I don't know the kinds of rabbit holes I'm going to go down at that point.
I think we could pick apart some of the smaller things.
Okay. All right. What do you got?
Cersei. I feel like Cersei has the smallest part in this because, of course, it was called Winterfell. So I feel like everything at Winterfell
kind of gels.
So we've got Cersei, and I feel like we could just kind of dissect that a little bit because her character hasn't changed. She, however, has a new friend in bed, Euron Greyjoy.
Yes.
Who brought Harry Strickland. Is that his name?
Yeah, Harry Strickland. And they kept the name.
I can't with that name. That is a terrible name for a Game of Thrones character. So terrible. Hi, I'm Harry Strickland. I'm here to help you with your taxes. It's tax day. It's April 15th. Got my calculator. The T1. What is that? T51? Remember those special calculators? Yeah. Harry Strickland in that suit has...
From Texas Instruments.
Texas Instruments. TI-51. Oh, my goodness. I get to store my notes inside. Harry Strickland. Worst name ever. I mean, is there any other worst name in Game of Thrones? If so, let us know in a comment below. But I think Harry Strickland wins for the worst name ever, Game of Thrones.
And so far, the guy himself is just generically good looking, in my opinion.
I don't like him, but really? Okay. We have different type, don't we?
No, I said he's generically good looking. That's not a good thing.
Okay.
That's not a good thing.
He's like a wannabe Jamie Lannister.
Yeah, he's a poor man's Jamie
Lannister.
Actually,
he was probably Jamie Lannister's stunt double in the dragon scene.
They were like, hey, Billy, get in frame.
Harry, not Billy. No, Harry.
The guy's real name's probably Billy. But you're going to play Harry. Yeah, Strickland. Uh-huh. Come here. Comb your hair back.
So we've got the Golden Company with Euron Greyjoy's ships. No elephants. Cersei was very upset.
Yeah.
Why was this such a big deal about elephants? I had no idea that they had elephants, but she was very upset by these elephants.
Would you want elephants in your battles? I mean, they're pretty bad.
Elephants don't behave, guys. I have a friend that works at the zoo. They don't always listen. I would be afraid I'd get stepped on.
Here we go. Let me ask you this. Here's a legitimate question.
Okay.
Do you feel kind of bad for Cersei?
Never. Will I ever feel bad for Cersei unless she loses a child? And she's already lost them all.
Yes. But
seeing
her take the drink and cry the way that she did, it's like when she says, you want a queen, you have to earn her. And that was full Cersei Lannister.
Yes.
Earn her. Great line. And then she gets up and she walks away and something just... clicks with her where she's like, I've got nothing left. And if I don't please this guy, he's going to be gone. He's going to leave. And all I got is Golden Company with no friggin' elephants.
Yes.
And to see how far she's fallen. Granted, she's done everything
terrible
to herself.
Things.
She's done everything to herself. Totally. I agree. But I just feel like the fall of this character is already beginning.
And he was a good lay. I don't feel bad for Cersei at all. She didn't say meh. She kind of alluded to, it was pretty good time.
Yes.
So I don't feel bad for Cersei. Like, honestly, unless this child that she says she's pregnant with, something terrible happens to this child, then I'll feel bad. But aside from her losing this child, I don't feel bad for Cersei. She's on my no list. And it takes a while for people to get on my no list, and she is on that list.
Okay, now that we're here, what do you got for Bronn? How do you feel about Bronn?
Do you believe that she actually did it? Do you, or do you think it was the maester?
What do you mean?
That gave Bronn all this money.
Oh, no, I fully believe.
You think it was Cersei?
Oh, I absolutely think
so. So, of course,
Cersei.
They go up to him and they're like, here's this crossbow, here's all this money.
The same crossbow
front.
That killed Tywin. And the same crossbow that Joffrey used to kill Roz.
Let me tell you, poor planning. That crossbow is not easily hidden or easy to transport. Like, it's not going to fit in your storage compartment on the plane to Winterfell. So you're going to have to strap it on your horse, and it's just going to keep hitting your horse's bum. That's a heavy thing. I would have just said, like, you're bringing your sword, just kill him.
Well, it brings up a great question about Bronn. Like, what does he choose? Does he choose to be the sellsword that he really is?
No, he's already got the money.
I know, but, you know, he had a great line where he's like, oh, yeah, your queen rectified this for me before. And I had a castle and a wife, and she got rid of both. Does he choose his allegiance with Tyrion and Jaime, by the way, who he became quite good friends with? Or does he choose Cersei? And now, like, where do you think he goes with that?
I think that Bronn is going to head up there and have this debate, you know, do I kill them, do I not? And then he's going to see the White Walkers, and he's going to say, none of this matters. I mean, he's been in here for the money from day one. From day one, Bronn has been here for the money. I mean, even when he leaves Tyrion's side, he says, like, hey, I'm here for money, buddy. That's what I'm here for. I think once he sees the White Walkers and understands that, because he hasn't really been a part of this war, he's going to stick with his Lannister boys.
I feel like that's part of... I think he's going to get to it, and I think he's going to go thinking, I'm going to do it.
Hopefully he buys some horses and carriages so less people get taken by the Night King.
But I just wonder if he has a... He doesn't necessarily have to redeem himself. Like, I don't think redemption is necessary.
I do.
Really?
I'm not. I mean, I know that you love him.
I do. Second favorite character.
I don't love him. Like, I wouldn't sleep if he was in the same house as me. I just wouldn't. I'd be like, I'm going to go stay down the block somewhere. I'm not going to tell you. I don't trust him, but I do think that he's so selfish that once he sees the Night King or the White Walkers, that he's going to take his own life into his own hands and say, you know what? I'm going to stick with these people who have dragons and they're my friends. Like, I know they'll save my butt too. I think he's a very selfish character. He does, of course, have this bromance with these two guys, but I think that the selfish, I want to stay alive part is going to win.
I think you're probably right on that. All right. So we're back in Winterfell because I think we've covered everything in King's Landing
Correct.
For the most part.
I agree.
I mean, and having said that, one of the things that I really like about this episode is, I struggle with this because it does have premiere disease, where it, you know, it has to get everybody in its thing and it has to show you everybody. But I feel like the show, even though it showed you everybody and had all these, it was quick to get to all these different characters. I feel like it took its time. It allowed breath. It allowed the emotions to stay within themselves. I mean, because think if we didn't do that, right? Think if we didn't have everybody and we didn't allow them to breathe and we didn't, we wouldn't.
you'd have like whiplash from seeing it all so
because
quickly.
Because we have to care about what's going to happen in the future. We have to care about it. And like, I know we're all excited about the premiere, and I think it's important to do what the episode did, which is highlight the relationships that make this show work so well. We've talked about this on This Is Us and Outlander cast. You know, character, sure, put character first, but what is character, right? It's the relationships that people share with one another. That's what drives people to care about people. And yes, I want the action, and it's so easy to get caught up in the whole action part of the dead versus the living and the whole thing. But we have to be reminded, I think, about the character's humanity. So establishing things like Jon and Arya, and Arya and Gendry, Arya and the Hound, Sansa and Tyrion.
He looks like he lost weight, by the way. Did his face look different?
It looked a little different. He looked a little more... I don't know. I'm not sure what it was.
I think he's on the keto diet. No, he's eating so much chicken. He's just on the keto diet. Yeah.
I'm going to eat every effing chicken in this place.
And he did.
If I hear one more word come pouring out of that mouth. I think I'll have two chickens. Even the relationships with Tyrion and Varys, Sam and Ser Jorah, the connections even between Sam, Jon, and Dany. Even at the very end, you have Jamie and Bran, that relationship. I mean, think of all of the things that have happened to both of those characters, and it all started because Jamie pushed Bran out the window, right? And all of this is happening while a chat happens between Varys, Tyrion, and Ser Davos about how they say nothing lasts. Mm-hmm. It's just breathtaking. It's breathtaking because while we have all this serious stuff, we even have the balance of all the smiles and the laughter in this episode between all of the characters. And everything is going to get really, really crappy very soon. And it's good to know where we're starting from. It's good to know to have that point of view. Right? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. You know, and so much of what you were talking about how this episode really mirrored the premiere episode of season one. I mean, even down to the music, when they had that big parade of everyone coming through, it was the same music when King Robert arrived in Winterfell in season one.
Yes.
Like, that careful are they with showing you, like, we're back where we began. We're going to have all the characters there. And so I think that it's important for us, just like you said, to have these ideas in the mind about what was established in the very beginning of season one and what we can and look forward to for the rest of this season. So I do want to discuss when they arrive, you get to have Arya's reactions.
Right.
To the parade of seeing all these people. I mean, this is the first time she saw Jon, and how cute was it? Her hesitancy to shout out and say something to him. How she saw the Hound. How she saw all of these people coming on in. And I love the different perspectives of this parade approaching Winterfell. You got to see. You didn't have to hear it. You got to see people's expressions and how the people who of the North, how they were understanding this. How, you know, Daenerys was feeling. She was, of course, very stoic. How Sansa appeared when she saw the dragons. It was kind of like, okay. Sansa was not impressed. So I just really enjoyed that parade procession and seeing everyone come in and seeing the reactions of how they were taking it.
And the symmetry here. And I like the word symmetry as opposed to mirroring.
Okay, yes.
And I know it's you know.
Tit for tat, but yes.
It's semantics here a little bit, but I like the word symmetry because it lines up so well with the first episode in so many different instances. And we'll start exactly with the beginning parade. I mean, from the music that it lines up with the first episode, you know, as King Robert is coming down and going into Winterfell, the same exact music is playing. Arya, instead of becoming the little girl that's so excited to see the king and the queen and the whole thing and, you know, dressed up in the armor with the helmet and everything, she sees the little boy run up the tree and allows him to do that, acknowledge it, smiles and says, I was once that person.
Yep.
You know, even the kid climbing up the tree, it's symmetrical with what Bran did as a kid. And climbed in the exact same way, right? And there are multiple cases of this happening, and it's showing you that the show has come so far from where it began.
From episode one.
Our characters are back in the same spot, but they're, for the most part, entirely different people. And sometimes the things still happen. I mean, for example, when Jon and Sam are, who are best friends, by the way, chatting in the crypts, they're talking in front of the monument of Lyanna Stark. And in the first episode, King Robert and Ned are talking about Lyanna Stark in front of Lyanna Stark. and they're talking about, oh, who's that bastard boy? Who's the mother you said? Blah, 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 blah. And here is Sam and John talking about being a bastard and his true parentage.
That he wasn't one. Yes.
Right, right. And even and the symmetry here, even ending with Jamie and Bran.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode ends with Jamie pushing Bran out. Bran coming up and seeing these two people, right?
I wonder if Jamie's going to have to be his official pusher, wheelchair pusher. You pushed him then. You could push him. You could push him south as we run away from the Night King. Because Hodor's gone. Who's pushing Bran? That's probably why he was out in the courtyard for 3 days. No one forgot to push him back.
He's like, hey, hey, Billy, come here.
Billy.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
No, and like, by the way, Bran, creepy as hell.
Seriously.
Creepy AF.
Well, first of all, it's not Bran anymore.
Well,
it's
yeah, you know what I mean. Raven. You know what I mean.
I love when John's like, look at you, you're a man. Almost.
Yeah.
And then John's face was of our faces. Because you know all of us at home, as we're like midway through bite of our Game of Thrones Oreo, went, ugh. Bran, stop being so weird. Bran's another one. I wouldn't want to be in the same house as him. He can stay with Bran. If your name begins with B, you can stay somewhere else.
Like everybody's faces, like you remember in the Real Housewives of New York when the girl was calling the girl a vampire, and she has that face of the. Everyone at Facebook Live got the pleasure of seeing that.
However, Sansa, I loved when Sansa, so John like looks at Sansa after Bran does that, kind of like, what is going on? And Sansa just gives him this look like, you know nothing, Jon
Snow.
Yeah,
I know.
You know nothing.
About a lot of freaking things.
Seriously.
So if you're Jamie, right? I know we have to get to this in the next episode, but how do you even approach Bran? Like, how do you even talk about, do you go up to him and be like, about that thing.
Listen, I've had to say I'm sorry about a lot of things in my life, but nothing as bad as that. I don't have any advice for Jaime Lannister. And Jaime Lannister's also said sorry a lot of times, but nothing as bad as that.
No. Like, I purposely pushed you out a window and paralyzed you for life.
And I haven't come back.
So sorry about that.
Bran.
So what do you feel about Bran about this whole thing? Because I still feel like the show has a Bran problem.
Well, exactly. Because if he can see the past, the future, he knows everything. It makes you wonder, why didn't Bran, who is, you know, John's brother, cousin, whatever, he's something to him. Why didn't he tell John? Why did he insist that Sam tell John? Why is Bran having, Bran's like a chess player. He's like moving all these little things. He knows what's happening. Why doesn't he say, little Umber boy, you probably don't want to go home right now. Why don't you just stay here? Or you could just stay here, honey. But you know what I mean? It's just something I still agree. We have this Bran problem. What can Bran know? What is he able to warn people about?
Right.
And why isn't he speaking up all the bloody time?
Right. And I think the writing for Bran is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Because how do you inject him into the story without being the deus ex machina, right? Like the thing that always just shows up and fixes everything, yeah. Right?
I will tell you, if Bran gives you a nasty look like he gave to Tyrion or to Daenerys, you better watch out. You're probably going to die. Like, I thought Daenerys was going to be okay until she went and saw Bran and he gave her this look that was kind of like, it was like Sansa's look, but Bran version.
Right.
It was like, you know nothing, girlfriend. You're not going to be here much longer. Or it was, I know what happened to your other dragon. Way to go, idiot. Now the wall's down.
Idiot.
And it's your fault.
such an idiot.
Like, he didn't give her a nice look.
No.
And
no.
He didn't give Tyrion. Remember when Tyrion like got to see Sansa and he's feeling really awkward about that too? Like, oh, remember how you left me? That wasn't cool. And then he looks down and Bran's staring at him from the same spot.
He's just waiting for Billy to come pick him up.
Bran was probably trying to use his like Professor X abilities. Will someone move me? It's like a wife when she's asking you to wash the dishes. I don't don't want to ask you to do the dishes. I want you to want to do the dishes. So that's Brian's problem, is I don't want to ask people to move me out of the courtyard. I want them to want to push me out of the courtyard. So maybe if I stare at them awkwardly enough, someone will push me.
If I just stare awkwardly.
Oh. Poor Brian. Poor Brian.
Oh my God. I feel like we're going to have a lot of fun at Brian's expense this season. I'm not going to lie. I feel like it's already started.
Okay.
And I don't even know where to go. The arrival. What? You're laughing. What do you got?
Oh, no,
nothing.
God.
Okay.
Right. Well, I'll wait until we get to John.
The arrival of Danny is an important one. And I feel like what they're doing with Sansa and Danny, it worries me a little bit.
Oh, I love it.
It worries me a little bit because, as Bran said, dude, we ain't got time for this.
Exactly. Because if Jon Snow had brought a guy home with dragons, they'd be all over it. The thing is, because you know what's been interesting is I've read a couple blog posts, I've seen a couple things about people's take on Sansa, and they're all like, ooh, Sansa, she's so mean to Daenerys. No, Sansa knows what's going on. Sansa sees this pretty little thing, and she knows that Jon was at the Night Watch while he like hit puberty, and now he's a fully grown man. Sansa knows what's going on. She even says it in the episode when she asks him, did you take the knee because you think she's a great queen, or did you take the knee because you love her?
Sure.
So I think Sansa's being smart. Like, she doesn't know Daenerys from any other queen that she's had to deal with. She's known plenty of them, and yet here comes Jon Snow being like, we gotta believe this girl. Sansa knows what men do for lust, what men do for women, you know,
she more than a lot of people, probably.
Exactly. Right. So that's why if John had brought home a guy, she probably would have been like, okay, cool. Like, this is great. But instead, she does need to stand her ground.
Meaning like a guy as a friend or a guy as a lover?
No, a guy as a friend. Oh, okay. A guy as, you know, not saying that if John were gay. I'm saying if John brought home someone he wasn't having sex with, I think Sansa would have better felt like, okay, this person's been vetted. But rightly so, she knows what's going on. She's sure. able to see it right away, as does everybody. Bran probably told her at dinner, oh, by the way, the girl that John's bringing home, I see them every night, they're having sex all the time in all the caves.
It worries me a little bit that the cattiness,
I don't think it's catty. I think that Sansa knows not to trust anybody.
Okay.
And I don't think she should trust Daenerys. In this episode, I believe that what Sansa has chosen and how she's chosen to act is proper, because she knows that her brother, cousin, has taken this person not just because he thinks he's great, but also because she's his lover.
Sure. I like how she asks the practical questions. Mm-hmm. The thing of like, listen, I had enough food for X, Y, and Z time. What do dragons even eat, by the way? And the answer that she got back, Sansa to me should just go in a room and never come out after that answer.
Why?
Because she got owned. She got owned in that one.
Oh, I see. She got owned in front of all of the lords of the North who have Sansa's back. They just saw Queen Daenerys be a queen bee.
That's true.
Okay. And to their lady.
Not Beyonce either, by the way.
No. They just saw. And then this woman, her hand is Tyrion. So here's this woman be like, they eat whatever they want. And Tyrion's like, and my sister's coming. Nobody is going to like you. So I think that Danny saying that was cruel. And not cruel, but just kind of like snobby.
Put you in your place.
Put her in her place. But in the room that she was in, Sansa's still up top.
Maybe. But you know,
not saying it's right, but we're the viewers.
That's
and
true.
Sansa has been double crossed.
I agree. And
everyone.
I feel like I'm making it sound like I'm not on Team Sansa. In fact, I'm not choosing teams or sides or anything. I actually quite like what Sansa's doing. I worry that the writers are making us feel like this is more important than it needs to be. But maybe that line from Bran is, we don't have time for this, and maybe it's just cutting through the crap.
But I also think that in addition to the Sansa stuff, they've given us reason with Sam to doubt Daenerys for the first time.
Yes.
So I agree. I mean, Sansa needs to rightfully say, do you 100% believe in this woman? Like, is she really the best, or do you just love her? And then Sam comes up and says, hey, your girlfriend killed my brother, which I'm sad about, my dad, whatever, but my brother, like,
what the hell?
What's going on? So now he has these two very close people saying, your girlfriend's not really nice. And when I cried in front of her at the library, she just stared at me like Bran. So, and Bran's not a fan of her either. You need a new girlfriend.
I read this great line, I forget where it was, where they were talking about Dany and how she has just burned so many people that like were against her. And the line was, Daenerys is one shiny glove away from being Thanos because she's just eliminated half of her enemies. Oh man, that was great. I laughed hysterically for a good minute and a half when I read that.
So Jon and Dany on their special little date. How'd you feel about that?
So I first of all, the CGI of them riding was a little rough for me.
Oh, I thought they did a very good job.
I thought it was as good as it could be. The CGI was a little rough. And I feel like the whole thing of the dragon riding, if this is going to sound really bad. You know what? I'm just going to preemptively play this.
Nerd!
If I hadn't seen How to Train Your Dragon...
The Hidden World, 1, 2, or 3, or the entire Netflix series,
or the Amazon series.
Yeah, Riders to the Edge.
Yeah. Riders of Burke and Defenders of Burke. Yes, those words just came out of my mouth. If I hadn't seen How to Train Your Dragon,
yeah,
it reminds me of Lewis Black. If it weren't for that horse, I wouldn't have spent that semester in college. If I had seen How to Train Your Dragon, I would have been very impressed.
Oh, really?
But I've seen How to Train Your Dragon, and I feel like they did that so much better than what I saw on Game of Thrones.
They did.
And
oh my God, the Astrid Hiccup ride around the waterfall.
Right.
So much
or
better.
Or even the Astrid Hiccup ride when, you know, when she discovers, you know, the dragon riding for the first time or whatever. Okay. Or the battle with the Red Death, you know. Hold on. Let me.
You just see this stop there.
I feel like
we have a lot of dragon love.
A lot of dragon love in this family. In House Larson, there's lots of dragon love. And I feel like if I hadn't seen that, I would have been much more impressed. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that kept playing in my brain was when Jon's was saying, I don't know how to ride a dragon. It's just the way that he said it. All I could think of was Arryt, son of Arryt. Because Kit Harington plays the voice of Arryt, son of Arryt.
How to Train Your Dragon.
That's all I could think of. However, I do understand and appreciate why they did it, and I appreciate why that is a building moment for both of those characters.
Yes.
Specifically because the dragon lets Jon ride him.
And Dany lets someone ride a dragon. She's never offered before.
Right, right.
I thought she would have let her bestie ride it.
What do you mean? Oh, Dario Naharis?
No.
Ser Jorah?
Missandei.
Oh, Missandei. Yeah, no.
Why didn't she get to ride a dragon?
Well, the reasoning behind it, within the mythology, is that only Targaryens can ride dragons.
Yes, but Dany doesn't know that, and she's like, here, you can ride it. She's been making Missandei just, like, ride on a dirty horse. that has like horse poop from the other horses all in front of it.
I don't think that would ever happen.
I know, but instead,
and again, that just plays to the whole equals thing,
yes,
right?
That's Dany what it's supposed to be.
And Jon, it without knowing it, is a Targaryen, and it alludes to the fact that he is a Targaryen. He just gets up there; and he can control the dragon, move in and out, land them when he wants to land it. I mean, we do have that scene where he's like holding on for dear life, you know, like and he can barely hold on. And it looks like Dany's impressed by him, and it looks like she is not falling more in love, but just recognizing that he is the right partner for her as more time goes along. I mean, would that feel right?
Yeah.
Would that feel right to you?
Yeah.
And you know, I like the whole thing of like, oh, you've completely ruined horses for me. And I love.
Love.
I love so much that I almost want to play Whitney right now.
Oh
that
gosh.
Much love.
What?
The symmetry, there's that word again.
Yes.
Between Dany and Jon that we had with the same symmetry with Ygritte and Jon. And they say, I want to go in the cave forever.
Yes.
And I could be there for 1,000 years. And it has this moment that John has where he, like, you almost want him to choose Danny. You mm-hmm. almost want him to say, yes, I've learned
like
my
lesson. This guy deserves love. Yes.
I've learned my lesson. I should have done it before, and I didn't because I had this feeling of duty. And here he is making the same choice. Now, whether or not she was going to do it, of course,
where's
I doubt
Ollie?
It.
We don't want Ollie to shoot her either.
Keep Ollie. You know, I think he was executed.
I think he was killed.
Yeah, I think he was killed. Yes.
Sorry, Ollie.
But I love the symmetry there of having that choice that John must make and that feeling of bringing it back. You're already laughing. What do you got?
So what I thought about this scene, you know, when you were dating and you had like your favorite restaurant that you would or bar that you'd bring someone out on a first date, or maybe it was like the hardcore date, like the date where you're like, oh, this thing's going to be serious. So I was serial dating before I met Blake. And I had a bar that I would meet people at frequently if I ever chose. And it was funny because the bartenders know. Like, they know that, all right, you're dating again. Like, here's the new person, mm-hmm. you know? And so I just kind of feel like John's place is the waterfalls. So he's probably like, oh, man. Oh. Oh, yeah, there's a waterfall here. That's how I do.
That's a cool place.
Yeah.
Do you know that they filmed all of that in Iceland?
I would believe that.
And obviously, it's gorgeous, the whole mm-hmm. thing. And they were filming it. They were like, yeah, this is really pretty, but we should add a waterfall. So they added, because they saw a little stream, and they mm-hmm. were like, we should add a waterfall. And so they did like all like green screen CGI, that whole waterfall.
Yes.
All that was gorgeous. Just computer animation.
Well, they did a great job.
Can you imagine that?
The Greyjoys. We missed them.
Yes.
Whatevs. Yay. Yara's free. That was quick. Theon's back to Winterfell. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see Yara again? Or is she?
Oh, yeah. Because once again, who run the world? Girls. Yeah, all the girls that are still alive are going to run this world.
The other thing, too, I wanted to point out here as well is Tyrion and Sansa. That relationship between the two, technically, mm-hmm. I think they're still married.
They never got divorced.
No. And like, I know they never consummated the marriage.
Oh, okay. So they didn't really get married.
But technically, they said the words. They said the oaths. And, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to come into play.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But
I mean, she's been married since then.
But it's great seeing the two of them mm-hmm. acknowledge where they were and how far they have come.
Yeah.
And I love the acknowledgement that Tyrion has for Sansa saying, others have doubted you before mm-hmm. and they're all dead now.
You know what I was ready for, though, was for him to say, how did you guys finally kill Littlefinger? There was no acknowledgement whatsoever from Varys, from Tyrion, from these people who've known Littlefinger, known how crazy he was, how good he was at the Game of Thrones.
Yep.
And nobody's like, hey, Arya, high five. You know, yeah, good job, Sansa.
Brah.
Yeah.
But there was this great moment, a Game of Thrones moment, really, mm-hmm. where Sansa says to Tyrion, I thought you were the cleverest man ever. For putting faith in his own sister.
Yes.
It's that one moment where it's a Stark finally outwits a Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
And I took great pride in that moment. Because I love Tyrion as a character. I love Sansa as a character. Mm-hmm. But just having that moment where he is outwitted for the, like, not for the first time, but
yes,
it's an interesting relationship that I can't wait to see how it plays out with the rest of the season.
I agree.
Because Tyrion never inherently did anything wrong to Sansa.
No. And likewise.
Right.
I think that they definitely have mutual respect. But, you know, Tyrion's promising this thing and it's just brought Sansa's opinion of him down a bit. But also, he's the hand to Daenerys. So until Daenerys earns herself in Sansa's eyes, he's not going to be Team Sansa.
Another great moment, another great own, if you will, is when... Sansa says to Tyrion, oh yeah, it had its moments.
Of the wedding. There were that's why I think I loved this episode so much. It put all the players in place. It caught you up to snuff. It had these moments of levity. And then, of course, had the ending, which we'll touch upon now. The ending, which is completely gruesome, horrific.
Yes.
The Night King has come. And he's on the way, and he has made it very clear that he's going to be using his gross techniques of pulling apart bodies and making them in a weird design.
Right.
Again,
right.
That none of us really understand. But what an amazing scene. I wasn't expecting that in the first episode. I'm really glad we got it. We did. We had so many joyous moments, fun reunions, awkward brand moments. But then to have the scary bit come on in. I just kept saying, like, buddy, light up your sword. I can't see. It's dark in here. Come on.
And this is the great thing about Game of Thrones, because, like I said, it allows things to breathe. There's no reason that that scene should have been that long of all of them walking in the hallways, having it be dark.
Like, I loved it.
I loved it, too. I absolutely loved it. And that's why it succeeds so much, because you feel that palpable tension. And it's released in that great moment. He's like, he's got blue eyes. Like, my eyes have always been blue. Right? Like, release of a great tension with some great humor, only for it to be backed up by this horrific, literally horror film-esque scene of Lord Umber being pinned to a wall with that design, which, by the way, has been shown throughout the show, by the way.
Yes, it was the first season, the first episode, right?
Well, no, the first episode, the markings were a little bit different.
Okay.
But when it showed up in a couple of different things, that spiral shape has shown up when the Night King was created.
Yes.
And also, it shows up in the opening credits, as a matter of fact. Last Hearth is set up on a ledge, and the ledge is of that same spiral. And also, I don't think it's coincidence that the spiral is reminiscent of the Targaryen sigil. And I don't think it's coincidence that the spiral is lit in flames. The whole thing.
Oh, man.
And it makes me wonder, is the Night King
a Targaryen?
No, well, coming after the Targaryens. Or is it a warning, like, we're coming after you?
Interesting.
Right?
Very interesting.
That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that whole thing was the Targaryen sigil. Now, it may not be. It might just be the iconography that they're referencing from earlier in the show. But it just... I don't think it's coincidence.
Okay. All right. I can dig that. All right. So are there any other major points that you want to bring up? I know that this episode's gone on a bit, but of course that was a lot to digest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the premiere. Come on. Breaking all the rules.
Breaking it all.
I got some fun trivia.
Okay. Bring it on.
Rob McElhenney from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yep.
A comedian. He made a cameo in this. He was the guy that had the arrow shot through his eye on the Greyjoy ship.
Oh, cool.
Ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Writer Dave Hill was also the guy who falls through the door when Theon walks in with the axe in his face.
Oh, that was so gross.
That's the writer of the episode.
Good job, buddy.
And George Lucas actually showed up to set when they were filming the scene with Kit Harington and Emilia Clarke when they're saying, "Oh, your sister hates me." He was there and he was helping direct that scene. He was giving advice.
That's amazing. Everyone must have geeked out.
Right. and George Lucas showed up because actually Emilia Clarke was actually in the movie Solo. She played one of the leads. And Dan Weiss and David Benioff, the showrunners of Game of Thrones, are actually contracted by Lucasfilm right now to write a whole brand new series of Star Wars films.
Oh my gosh.
As soon as they finish Game of Thrones, they are segueing right into the Star
like
Wars
Captain
universe.
Captain Planet. Our powers combine. Oh, that's amazing.
So, I have a new segment that I'd like to introduce here.
Yep.
The throne rankings.
Okay.
Where we number each of our throne members, where we think that's like power rankings. Who we think is going to end up on the throne at the end of the season?
Oh man. Okay. All right. So, I wasn't prepared for this. You go first.
It's okay. You know, I'm going to play some music for you, so you can. We'll do this. So this was the music that they actually played in season one when the king showed up.
Hey.
So I figure it's apropos that we play this.
All right. So this is your rankings of who you think is going to be on the throne at the end of the season.
Yes. So.
And is the one is yes?
One is the top choice.
Okay.
Number five is the bottom choice.
Okay.
All right. Number five for me, the Night King.
Ooh.
The Night King, I feel like, could end up on the throne.
Oh, I dig it.
And I just have this vision of the Night King sitting on the throne. And he may not stay there.
Okay.
He may die. But I just have this feeling he's going to end up sitting on that throne. Number four, Dany ends up being on the throne at the end. Number three, Jon ends up being on the throne at the end. Number two, my number two pick, if I'm on a betting pool, my number two pick is Cersei. I just feel like she's evil enough to just make it through. And then my number one pick, I think you're going to be surprised by this.
Okay.
I'm going to let the music ride here.
Okay. The winner is?
Sansa. That's my number one pick.
Okay.
I feel like Sansa has enough. She's got enough guts, she's got enough glory, and she's got enough smarts. I think they're right. She is the smartest character in the whole show right
now. Agreed.
I think she's got enough smarts.
Nobody else was thinking about food. She's understanding what the troops need.
All right, what do you got for your five picks?
Okay, since this was thrown out of nowhere, my top five pick.
Number five.
Number five pick, yep. There's no throne.
Ooh, good one.
It's just going to melt or something, or some icy blast. Number four, Cersei. I think she'll just like claw her way on that throne and not give it to anybody. Gendry.
Okay.
Am I saying it right this time?
Yes. Number three is Gendry.
Number three is Gendry.
Okay, that'd be interesting.
I'd be down with that. So would Arya.
It would come full circle. There was sexy time between the two,
There was some moments.
There was some sexy
lady.
Time.
Ooh, I know. So I'd be down with him being king for a little bit.
You know, and it would be symmetrical with the first season.
With some Baratheon.
With a Baratheon being on the throne. That would make sense.
And then Dany, just because I feel like she's got the peeps. And Jon, just because now he has the blood right. This was thrown at me all of a sudden, so I do not know if I would back this up tomorrow. But I'll be better prepared next week.
All right, so now it is time for the three-eyed raven time. Do you have some three-eyed raven
feelings? You can go first.
Feelings? Do you have some?
I don't know yet, okay. So you can go first. I don't have any.
All right, my first one is this. Cersei is not pregnant. She is absolutely...
She touched her belly.
I know. She is not pregnant.
Okay.
And was only saying that to keep Jaime in check.
All right.
To keep him around. And then when he went away, she lost that leverage. The problem why she's crying is because she knows she's probably going to end up getting pregnant by
she
Euron.
She knows she's ovulating.
She knows.
She was horny AF, and she was...
She took the ovulation cycle test. She took the test, the ovulation test.
The pee on the stick ovulation test?
Yeah. She took that, and she realized, oh my God, I'm ovulating.
You know too much about women. Women can know they're ovulating in other ways.
And then the last one I have
like
is that
witches.
The credits are still going to change on an episode basis. They're going to show us important parts of each place that the important scenes will take place in. So,
okay.
Like, you know, we saw the Red Keep. We saw the Crypts. We saw... Last Hearth. I feel like they're going to still show us those places, but different parts of those places where the important scenes are going to happen. And I think each thing is going to change as the Night King comes closer. I think that's what's going to happen.
I dig it.
What's your three-eyed raven time? Get anything?
I don't have anything.
Come on.
I'll be better. I just like blew everything in that I already said. I'm not like Bran. Bran weirds me out.
He's so creepy.
Will Bran land on the throne?
No, I don't think he will.
Will he end up in the bottom of a tree?
Yeah, he's going to turn into a tree. Bran's absolutely going to turn into a tree.
Oh, that was so weird.
All right, you ready to close this bad boy out?
Yes. Where are the children of the forest?
Oh, that's a good question.
Where are they? Those little rascals.
Because I feel like they're going to have to play a role in defeating the Night King at some point.
Well, now, isn't the Night King in front of them?
Right, because he's halfway between Last Hearth and Winterfell.
Maybe they've dug little tunnels underneath the roots of the tree, and they're making their way, and they're going to pop out like gophers.
How much do you want to bet? How much? Here's another.
Is this my three-eyed raven-ish?
Here's another three-eyed raven time for me. Ready?
Okay.
How much do you want to bet? Remember the scene with the Night King and in the trailer where it has the horse and it takes the two steps towards Winterfell? How much do you want to bet the next episode ends on that?
Okay. I don't want to bet anything because I don't really have much except... Seltzer water.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Okay, that'd be interesting.
I'm absolutely calling that out. That the episode two will end with the two horse steps in front of Winterfell. And then it's going to cut to black.
Okay. I could be down with that.
I think that'll be a really cool segue into the Battle of Winterfell. All right. Are you ready?
To close out the show.
Let's do it.
We want to thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this, the premiere episode recap of Game of Thrones, the final season. We really enjoyed watching this, and of course, obviously, you could tell we enjoy talking about this, but we would love to hear your thoughts as well. So make sure that you're reaching out to us on social media. Honestly, the best place to reach out to us is our Facebook page. Just search Mary and Blake. We'll always have a thread up there that you can comment on. You can send us a message there. You can also find us on Twitter. You can find us on YouTube. You can send us an email, or you could go to maryandblake.com.
And listen, if we have enough responses from you guys, maybe, just maybe, we'll have a listener feedback episode.
Every once in a while.
Every once in a while. We'll see. I mean, well, you know, I'm just going to say, send your stuff in that you want to talk to us about, and maybe we'll have some listener feedback episodes like we do on OutlanderCast and like we did for the Living Reminders podcast.
Because we also have to talk about next week's trailer.
That's true.
We're just saying that there's enough fodder that if you would enjoy another The North Remembers episode, we might be able to
Like OutlanderCast and The Leftovers podcast, there is a voicemail app that you can use.
Okay.
Go to maryandblake.com and go to contact, and you'll see a little space for a thing called SpeakPipe. Just click the little button there. It uses the microphone on your phone or your computer. It sounds great. It's free. It will leave us voicemails. And hey, like I said, if enough of you do it, we'll have it.
We'll do that.
So go to maryandblake.com.
So
hit the contact button. You'll see an app for SpeakPipe.
Well, thanks once again for tuning in. And if you've watched on Facebook Live, thank you as well. Make sure that you share this with your friends, whether sharing them on the podcast app or sharing the live video. We truly appreciate it. And for now, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And the North remembers.